he hadn't heard in their first discussion. "What are you trying to say?" he asked. "I am responsible directly to the Secretary General of the United Nations," Giap said. "My orders come directly from him." Doug leaned forward anxiously in his chair. "And what are those orders?" "He expects me to accept your surrender." Doug heard Anson mutter behind him, "When he can breathe vacuum, that's when we'll surrender." He said mildly to the blank screen, "Your first wave had to surrender to us, Colonel." Giap seemed to hesitate. Then he replied, "It would be quite easy for us to cut off your electrical power supply." There it was at last. Doug almost felt relieved. "Not as easy as you may think, Colonel," he replied. "We've buried secondary lines to take over if the primaries are cut. We have sensors that will find all the lines." "And we have your first wave's weapons," said Doug, putting some steel into his voice. "Don't force us to use them." "So we will have a firefight?" "I believe my troops have more guns and more ammunition for them."
"How much oxygen do they have?" Doug asked.
"What do you mean?"
"How long can you remain out on the crater floor, Colonel? Remember, we have some of your shoulder-fired missiles now. We can hit your tractors.
We have all the logistics we need. You should surrender to me and avoid useless bloodshed."
Before Doug could reply, Gordette leaned over his shoulder and pointed to the screen showing the floor of the crater. "There's some activity out there." Doug glanced at the screen.
"Wait a moment, Colonel," he said. "I'll be back with you in a few minutes."
Cutting the connection to the peacekeepers, Doug punched up a request to rerun the outside camera view.
"Look," Gordette pointed.
"Over there." A dozen spacesuited figures marched purposefully toward the main airlock. As they approached, they walked out of the camera's field of view.
"What do the cameras inside the garage show?"
Checking on them, Doug and Gordette saw that the view from inside the garage did not show the dozen troopers at all. They stopped outside.
"Off to one side of the main airlock," Doug said.
"Why?" asked Gordette.
"I'll try to find out," said Doug.
Colonel Giap was alone in the tractor's cab now. Through his binoculars, he could see a squad of his troopers helping the Sacred Seven up an aluminum ladder they had placed against the face of the mountain, just to the side of Moonbase's main airlock. They were struggling to open the square hatch that led into the old plasma vents. Giap had studied Moonbase's layout until he knew it as well as the face of his beloved mother. The plasma vents were from Moonbase's earliest days, when the builders were excavating tunnels by boiling away the rock with high-temperature plasma torches. The vents let the ultra-hot vapors blow out into the vacuum outside. The vents had not been used, as far as Giap knew, in years. Yet they threaded through the rock above the main corridors of Moonbase. Crawling through them, a man could reach every critical part of the base. "The volunteers will penetrate the base before the rebels know they are being infiltrated. Their first warning will be when the fanatics begin to blow themselves up. Themselves and every crucial part of Moonbase."
"Colonel Giap?"
Stavanger's voice sounded in his earphones.
"I am still here," he answered.
"We saw a dozen or so of your troops move off to one side of the main airlock. Now they're out of our camera's view. What's going on?"
Giap was prepared for the question.
"They are setting up a maintenance station to repair the spacesuits your dust has fouled. They are trying to remove the dust from their faceplates and joints."
Stavanger did not reply immediately.
"Does he believe my lie?" Giap wondered.
"Let's get back to the main point," the Moonbase commander said at last. "Are you willing to withdraw and leave us in peace?"
"I am not allowed to do so," Giap stalled. "My orders do not permit it."
"If you try to cut off our electricity, we'll be forced to fire on you." Giap thought the man's voice sounded very reluctant.
"Then I suggest you surrender now, while you have the chance."
"While you have the chance." Giap's voice had an urgency to it that made alarm bells ring in Doug's head.
"What do you mean?" he asked. "You won't accept a surrender if you're able to cut off our electricity?"
No answer for several long moments.
Then the colonel replied, "If you fire upon my troopers, if a firefight is started,
Who knows what will happen next? A battle is not a predictable thing. There will be many deaths.
Doug got the distinct feeling that there was a hidden subtext in the colonel's words. He wants me to read between the lines, Doug thought. What's he trying to say?
Colonel, I wonder what... The control center shook so abruptly that Doug nearly toppled off his chair.
A low rumble echoed through the rock chamber. The lights flickered.
What was that?
A quake?
An explosion!
Doug scanned his screens with newfound intensity. The solar farms seemed intact. No one was even near them.
The water factory! A technician yelped. We've lost contact with the water factory.
The bastards have blown up the water factory.
Control center. Give me a view of the water factory, Doug yelled. Cameras are out, a technician hollered back.
Doug saw a blank screen where the view of the factory should have been.
Ginny, get a repair team in there.
Already on their way,
Anson yelled over her shoulder halfway to the door.
How did it happen?
Rerun the security camera. With Gordette grasping both his shoulders from behind him, Doug saw the camera's view of the automated water factory. A blur of a figure dropped out of the top of the picture. A flash, and then the camera went dead.
What was that? Doug asked.
A man, said Gordette. A person, anyway.
In a spacesuit, someone else said.
Spacesuit. Doug's heart clutched in his chest. The plasma vents.
He came in through the old plasma vents.
What the hell are plasma vents? Gordette asked. The explosion staggered Zimmerman in his nanolab. A metal cylinder rolled off the bench and crashed to the tiled floor. Inoguchi grabbed the edge of the lab bench where he was standing to steady himself.
A bomb?
Inoguchi asked.
Or an accident of some sort, said Zimmerman.
The two scientists had been working flat out on producing therapeutic nanomachines for Cardenas and the medical team in the infirmary. They had not followed the course of the battle. Zimmerman had insisted that he didn't want to know, not until it was over and decided, one way or the other.
Should you try to find out? Inoguchi said, looking worried.
Perhaps we should evacuate this laboratory.
Leave?
Zimmerman's shaggy brows shot up.
Before we have finished this batch, abandon our work? Never.
Inoguchi edged toward the nearest phone console.
Perhaps we should at least attempt to determine what has happened.
Good. You call. I want to check the progress.
An overhead panel ripped open with a blood-freezing screech of metal upon metal, and two space-suited figures dropped down in dreamy lunar slow motion into the middle of the lab.
Gott in the Himmel! Zimmerman roared. What is this? How can I work with such interruptions?
The two figures walked slowly among the lab benches, turning every which way like children wandering through a toy store as they approached the two scientists. Their spacesuits were bundled around their middles, with bulky packages wrapped in plastic, with a simple, small black box taped to them. Inoguchi saw a red push button on the black box of the intruder nearest him. Detonators, he realized. The person nearest Zimmerman raised the visor of his helmet, revealing the face of a handsome young man with a neatly clipped dark beard.
"This is the nanotechnology laboratory," he asked in Oxford-accented English.
Who are you? Zimmerman demanded. What are you doing in here?
Bombs,
Inoguchi gasped, backing away toward the door to the corridor.
Suicide bombers!
Do not move!
Do not move,
the bearded young man commanded. Inoguchi froze in his tracks. The other intruder raised her visor.
You are Professor Zimmerman, aren't you?
She asked in a sweet, lilting voice.
Yes. And you are interrupting work of the utmost importance, Zimmerman blustered.
The young woman smiled.
God is great, she said,
and pushed her detonator button. Zimmerman saw a flash, and then nothing. The second explosion rattled the control center even harder than the first.
They got the nanolab. We're under attack.
The plasma vents, Doug thought. Remembering how he himself had crawled through the old vents years ago to get to the environmental control center before his insane half-brother could destroy it. There's a double hatch in the face of the mountain, he recalled.